Hello everybody, it's Liz here with the poems. And my first poem is by Stevie Smith. She was born in 1902 and died in 1971. And her real name wasn't Stevie at all, it was Florence Margaret Smith. And she lived in Palmer's Green in London, and she lived in the same house all her life and never married. And she was quite a sad person, really. And there's a theme. I've got five poems, and my theme is sort of loosely spring-ish. And this poem reminded me of going to Wales. I went to Wales at the end of March, and the beginning of April, they had trips from where we were staying, which was Tenby, to go and look at seals basking on the rocks. But I never got to see them because we came home before the 1st of April, so I missed it. But this is Hymn to the Seal. And also, I've partly chosen it because I went to see some lambs at Trentham Gardens, and they're born black, but they go white. They go grey and then white. They were Herdwicks. There was some Jacob's sheep as well, but I think they stay the same colour. So this is a seal, but this one changes colour as well. So I thought, oh, this reminds me of spring. Hymn to the Seal by Stevie Smith. Creature of God, thy coat that lies all black and fine, I do admire as on a sunny rock to see thee climb. When thou wast young, thy coat was pale with spots upon it, but now in single black it lies, and thou, seal, lies on it. What bliss abounds to view God's creatures in their prime, climb in full coat upon a rock, to breathe and to recline. So there we are, the seal changes colour to black, whereas the lambs at Trentham change away from black. Now my next poem, and I've already lost it, is called The Invading Spring. So I'm definitely on spring here. It's by Phoebe Hesketh. She was born in 1909 in Lancashire. She died in 2005 in Buxton. And she writes about modern man obsessed with time. She thinks he's almost cut himself off from nature, but nevertheless feels its power in spite of itself. So this is The Invading Spring. Man has fenced the wilderness back in the hills, tamed in the town. He walks on concrete blocks, and in the park his heart with pleasure fills, but not at Wordsworth's schoolbook daffodils. No. His delight is catching up with clocks and turning knobs and pressing button A. The train is due. There's half a minute to go, but the lift's gone down and the escalator's slow. Praise God for the underground this lark song day. Breathing yet dead, his life is caged with steel, wire, wheel and cable, automatic aids to living. He exists, but cannot feel the slow barbaric beauty that invades the world at spring. He moves in crowds and queues and reads the morning star and the evening news, but cannot read the sky, though April beats a golden fanfare down the dusty streets and breathes a green breath through the petrol fumes. Yet a third floor room is powerless to deny the feel of leaves, the pollen smell behind new flowered cretonis, where a rebel wind is strong and blue with ranging through the sky. And though the file of his mind are entered up like office ledgers, unknowing he holds the cup brimmed with the light of moons beyond his reach. The street is thronged with more than he can know, the invisibles who know him. Without speech they call him, without form they come and go and catch him by the sleeve until the slow, unwilling flesh is beckoned from its task. Released, he finds the viral stream that spills a primrose light on swollen window sills. And now, Home Thoughts from Abroad. by Robert Browning. He was born in 1812 and he died in 1889. He was born in Surrey, but he died in Venice. And that's where he'd gone when he ran away with Elizabeth Barrett Browning. So he had a fellow poet. I think he rescued her, didn't he, from her family who were telling her she was ill and couldn't go anywhere. I've probably got that all wrong. But anyway, he mentions April here and May, and we are now in May, so I thought I'd read this. Home thoughts from abroad. Oh, to be in England now that April's there, and whoever wakes in England sees some morning, unaware that the lowest boughs and the brushwood sheaf round the elm tree bole are in tiny leaf, while the chaffinch sings on the orchard bough. In England now. And after April, when May follows, and the white throat builds, and all the swallows, hark, where my blossom pear tree in the hedge leans to the field and scatters on the clover blossoms and dewdrops at the bent spray's edge. That's the wise thrush. He sings each song twice over, lest you think he never could recapture the first fine careless rapture. And though the fields look rough with hoary dew, all will be gay when moontide wakes anew. The buttercups, the little children's flower, far brighter than this gaudy melon flower. And my next poem is by, it's Horse Fair by R.C. Scriven. He lived from 1907 until 1985. And he was his favourite medium was radio drama. And why I'm reading this, it's Horse Fair. And he mentions autumn, but I think he's wrong. Because I know the Autumn Fair at Appleby happens the first week in June, which is coming up. So I thought I'll read this, because in June I'm hoping that Jean will be back. So, and then you'll get a more professional reader. So this is Horse Fair. To Appleby in Westmorland, I took a chestnut mare. The roads dip in, the roads climb out, the shallow river full of trout sings, purls and ripples round about its green-cupped fields, and there they hold the autumn fair. To Appleby in Westmorland, by one and two and three come strawberry rowans and Cleveland bays, high-stepping hunters, galloways, hacks, driving cobs, flea-bitten greys from all the north country. To Appleby in Westmorland come gypsy living vans. They've travelled from the downs, the wolds, like galleons with bursting holds of gilts and scarlets, greens and golds, and brooms and pots and pans. To Appleby in Westmorland come mugs and sharps and flats, and shires that plod, and colts that prance, and girls as gallant as a lance, and dealers hard of countenance as their own bowler hats. To Appleby in Westmorland I took a chestnut mare. She'd mark of mouth, her wind was sound, I meant to sell, I led her round. I gave the farmer back a pound for luck when our clasped hands had bound the bargain. Yet I swear I almost wish I had not found a buyer at the fair. And there's a bit of history there, because people like Tim won't know where Westmorland is. It's Cumbria now, Tim. He's nodded his head. And I know that that used to be, when I was a child at a market, you'd give somebody a small amount of money and clasp hands, and that will shake on it. That was your done then, a done deal. You couldn't back out. He obviously wanted to back out of selling his horse. And finally, a gardener's poem. The Mad Gardener's Song by Lewis Carroll. He was born in 1832 in Darsbury and died in 1898 in Guildford. And his real name was Charles Lutwidge Dodson. Author, poet, mathematician, photographer, because he kept photographing Alice Liddell, who inspired him to write Alice in Wonderland. And he was also a reluctant Anglican deacon. So this is the Mad Gardener's Song. And I've read this because, reading this because I did do a bit of gardening. That's quite an event for me. It must be spring. The Mad Gardener's Song. He thought he saw an elephant that practiced on a fife. He looked again and found it was a letter from his wife. At length, I realise, he said, the bitterness of life. He thought he saw a buffalo upon the chimney piece. He looked again and found it was his sister's husband's niece. Unless you leave this house, he said, I'll send for the police. He thought he saw a rattlesnake that questioned him in Greek. He looked again and found it was the middle of next week. The one thing I regret, he said, is that it cannot speak. He thought he saw a banker's clerk descending from the bus. He looked again and found it was a hippopotamus. If this should stay to dine, he said, there won't be much for us. He thought he saw a kangaroo that worked a coffee mill. He looked again and found it was a vegetable pill. Were I to swallow this, he said, I should be very ill. He thought he saw a coach and four that stood beside his bed. He looked again and found it was a bear without a head. Poor thing, he said, poor silly thing, it's waiting to be fed. He thought he saw an albatross that fluttered round the lamp. He looked again and found it was a penny postage stamp. You'd best be getting home, he said, the nights are very damp. He thought he saw a garden door that opened with a key. He looked again and found it was a double roll of three. And all its mystery, he said, is clear as day to me. He thought he saw an argument that proved he was the Pope. He looked again and found it was a bar of mottled soap. A fact so dread, he faintly said, extinguishes all hope. And that's my poetry for this week.